Okay, so we're going to talk today about Holy Week because it is upon us. Lent has almost officially come to an end. I was just talking with Gary, and the official ending of Lent, rather, is just before worship on Maundy Thursday or Holy Thursday. So we're in that fuzzy in-between time between Lent and the 3 days. But we're going to talk about Holy Week today. Okay. Yes. All right. Let's start with a word of prayer. God, as we enter into this holiest of weeks, we remember that you are with us. When things are celebratory and exciting and joy-filled, when things are scary and chaotic, and when things are dark, we remember that you are with us every step of the way, giving us your confidence, your assurance, and your hope. Be with us in our conversation this morning. Grant us open hearts and open minds, and let us leave room for your Spirit to move and work in us. Amen. Okay, so I always like to start with a question. What comes to mind for you when you think of Holy Week? Easter, okay.
Our wedding anniversary.
Your wedding anniversary, okay.
Easter egg hunts.
Easter egg hunts. Yeah.
Church services.
Church services, yes, there are a few extra.
Singing in choir.
Singing in choir, yeah. Other responses. What comes to mind for you when you think of Holy Week?
Maundy Thursday?
To the end and the beginning of the story.
The end and the beginning of the story, yes.
To remember your blessings.
To remember your blessings. In the Lutheran Church, we are very diligent about remembering what happens on Thursday and Friday. But what happens on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday? Has anyone ever taken the time to dive in? I looked at the specifics of it while I was putting this together today. So if you haven't, it's okay. Yeah, it is. In a sense, it is a memorial about the Savior. That's a great point. By the time we get to Friday, it very much feels like a funeral, and really a funeral without a lot of hope, which is different from how we celebrate funerals typically. So yeah, that's a great point. On Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of Holy Week, Jesus was really busy. Today we celebrate Palm Sunday. When we have our worship service in just a little bit, we'll have palm branches. We'll sing All Glory, Laud, and Honor. We'll read about the triumphal entry, which is what we call it. But then after that, Jesus goes from being celebrated to kind of looking at the city of Jerusalem and crying again. It's the second time in Luke's gospel that he weeps over the city because of how he was treated and how it typically tended to treat prophets. And he goes from that to entering the temple. And in Luke's gospel, that's when he tosses the tables and gets really angry and upset at the whole temple system. And in Luke's gospel, that event right there where Jesus tosses the tables is the one where the chief priests and the scribes and all the elders say, you know what, that we got to get rid of him. This is too much. So in Luke's gospel, it's actually Jesus's reaction in the temple that makes that happen. After that, that's all on Sunday. Then he goes home or to a friend's home. And then on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of Holy Week, Jesus is in the temple every day. He goes there in the morning and he leaves in the evening. And during those days, he's teaching. And as he teaches, more and more people come in to hear him because his popularity is really starting to build. It began on Palm Sunday with that little bit of celebration, and it keeps continuing to build. And the elders of the temple, the leaders, the chief priests are really starting to get irritated with all of it. because of the popularity. They question his authority, and Jesus, being Jesus, answers back in a way that kind of stumps them. And so they continue to look for a legitimate reason to kill him, because criticizing the temple and criticizing them really wasn't enough. They had to have a solid crime for it. As all of this goes on, Jesus prophesies, he tells a parable, he critiques the temple system, and then what ultimately ends up happening is by Wednesday, there are so many people packed in there that it's really starting to draw attention to Jesus, to the temple, and what's going on. And for the leaders in the temple, this was problematic, because if the attention was being drawn to the temple, it was going to be drawn to them as leaders, and it potentially threatened their position of leadership. Remember that Jerusalem and this whole area was occupied by Rome. It was an occupying power. It wasn't one where they had kind of a happy, congenial arrangement. And for the most part, the government of Rome tended to ignore Jewish feasts and festivals. They kind of just let the people do what they wanted to do. Passover was the exception, which is what all of this was building up to, was the feast of the Passover. Who remembers, or who can tell me rather, what does Passover celebrate? What does it commemorate?
The flight from Egypt.
The flight from Egypt. Yeah.
Pharaoh wouldn't let them leave, and then the final part was that God took the firstborn children.
Yep.
Unless they have blood.
Right. Pharaoh wouldn't free the Hebrew slaves, and so the final plague was the death of the firstborn. And so there were certain things that had to be done to have the angel of death pass over, which meant sacrificing a lamb and painting blood on the doorposts. And so in that final plague, in that final act, God defeated Pharaoh. And at the time Pharaoh was in power, he was politically the most powerful leader in the known world. And the Roman government knew that. And so for them, was a particularly dangerous time to occupy this area, because if there was ever going to be a chance that the Judeans would rise up against Rome and try and rebel against Rome, it was going to be during this festival, because of what it commemorated and because of the power of God that it remembers. And so during Passover and in the days leading up to it, Rome made it a point to have extra soldiers in Jerusalem. There were extra officials in the city, including Pontius Pilate. That's why he was there that week. And it was to provide a visible reminder to the Jewish people that if you do rise up, we will crush you and we won't think twice about it, because we are the ones who are in power. And so all of this was going on, and the temple authorities did not want any more attention drawn to them than necessary because of this. And so again, this was, it was a tense time anyway in the city, and Jesus's presence and his popularity was just kind of adding to it. And so by the end of Wednesday, they'd had enough. And on Thursday, the plan to arrest Jesus and hand him over to the authorities was set in motion. How is all of this sitting with you so far? How many of you knew about the political stuff behind the scenes? Is that, yeah? Okay, good. Kinda, sort of, not, yeah? It happens on the Saturday. I mean, it's a floating holiday, like our Easter is a floating holiday.
Yeah, but our Easter's always Sunday.
But the meal itself is celebrated on the Sabbath. So it would have been celebrated on Saturday. They were getting prepared for it. They were making the preparations for it Thursday and Friday.
Okay.
Yeah. Other thoughts or comments? How's all of this sitting? Thank you. So again, by the end of Wednesday, the temple leaders were done. They'd had enough and they wanted it to stop. And by Thursday, the plan to arrest Jesus and hand him over to the authorities was set in motion. So in church, when we get to Thursday, we shift, all of this, everything we've been talking about is from Luke's gospel, because that's the one we're emphasizing this year. But on Thursday, we shift to John's gospel for the account of the Last Supper and the way Jesus says goodbye to his disciples. And in that goodbye, he washes the disciples' feet, which was something very unusual. Usually it was common. I talked about it in my children's message last Sunday. It was common to have a basin of water and some towels for people to wash their feet when they came in. If it was a wealthy person's home, they might have one of their servants or their slaves wash someone's feet. But for a teacher to wash his students' feet just wasn't done. And as he did it, the disciples were trying to figure out what was going on, probably feeling a little uncomfortable. But afterwards, Jesus gives them a new commandment: love one another as I have loved you. And so I want to know, have any of you ever had your feet washed during a worship service? I have, yeah. Have any of you had the opportunity and declined it? I'm just curious. There's no judgment. Okay. For those of you that have had your feet washed during a worship service, how was that experience? I've had it done. The congregation I served in Phoenix, it was a traditional part of the Maundy Thursday service that we did. But the way that sanctuary was structured, everything, it was just a really long nave. And so all of the chairs were up front with everyone's backs to the congregation if they were seated. So the attention wasn't on them. They weren't necessarily being watched by everyone. When it came to, I helped wash feet. I had mine washed. And it's very humbling. It's very moving. The first time it was a little uncomfortable because I was up there in my alb and my stole and, you know, trying to pull everything up so that nothing got wet. It was uncomfortable that first year. And then after that, it just became a part of the service. Like I said in my children's sermon, and what I've told other preschool kiddos, it's a way of taking care of each other. It's a way of showing love for one another. And it's a way of showing love through service. And it was kind of the final act of love and devotion that Jesus had for his disciples, on that night. After they had washed their feet, Jesus shares a meal with the disciples and then begins to say goodbye to them. And it's what Jean alluded to. The words of assurance, the words of calm, taking control, assuring them that he was still in control, that even though things were going to get really chaotic, he was still speaking words of comfort, reminders of who the disciples are, how Jesus wanted them to treat and interact with each other. Really just words really of promise, promise embedded in the command to love one another. We already started to answer this question, but how do you imagine the disciples felt on Thursday night, hearing Jesus say all of these things after the excitement of earlier in the week and his popularity building? How do you think they felt when they finally realized, oh, he really is saying goodbye and things are really going to change? How do you imagine they would have felt?
Well, I think they started with denial.
Denial?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Confusion.
Jesus was the center of their universe. Yeah. Marv said jealous. Yeah. For me, when I read, you know, how everybody celebrated Jesus at the beginning of the week, and then we get to Thursday night, feels like the world got upended, almost like a table that was off balance and fully loaded and just kind of tipped over. Yeah. Any thoughts or comments from home? So after this long farewell, and in John's gospel, it really is a long farewell. It's four chapters, and John is not the most concise writer, so it's four long chapters. But again, within those chapters are words of comfort, words of assurance, words of promise. Again, who Jesus is, how he wants his disciples to be with one another, what he wants them to continue in his name. After that goodbye, they go into the garden, and then that's where Jesus is arrested, handed over to the authorities. It's during that scene that Peter cuts off the ear of the high priest's servant. So lots of chaos, lots of confusion, probably lots of anger, maybe even some tears. Again, just a complete reversal of the excitement and the joy they had experienced only a few days earlier, really even 24 hours earlier, with the buildup of Jesus's popularity. And so between the time of Jesus's arrest on Thursday night and his death on Friday afternoon, things move very quickly. And it's not that we have to pay attention to all of the details, but oh, don't fail me now. Here we go. Whoops. But how do we slow down those 24 hours? How do we slow down that story so that we can take it in? One of the ways we do that is in our worship services on Thursday evening and Friday evening. They're quieter. They're more contemplative. They end in silence to signify that the worship is not done. The service is not done. There is a continuation of it. We can also, for those of you who are watching from home, I do have a handout. If you want it, just send me an email and I'll get it to you. It has some suggested readings for this coming week. Jean's got it. She's showing it to you on her camera. And then some guidance for prayer or devotional time, particularly on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, since those are the days we tend to skip over for worship. It's important that we pay attention to what goes on Thursday and Friday. I don't mean fixate on it. I don't mean, you know, let it become so consuming that you can't see your way through. But don't ignore it either. There are a lot of people who just skip from Palm Sunday to Easter and don't pay attention to what comes between. And it's important to pay attention to what comes in between because it's kind of the heart of the story. It gets us from one to the next. And so it's important to take those steps and at least spend some time in prayer about it if nothing else. Any questions, comments? Do any of you have particular practices that you follow during Holy Week? I listened to, I have an audio CD of Dubois' Seven Last Words in Latin. Somebody tracked it down for me because it's almost impossible to find. And it's a really poor recording. It sounds terrible in my car, but I still listen to it. And there's one, and I don't remember which word it is, but it starts out so low that you can't hear it. And if I turn it up loud enough so that I can hear it, and when the rest of it comes in, it doesn't sound good at all. But music definitely. So again, our worship services on Thursday and Friday end in silence to help us remember that the worship is not done, that there is more to come. And we remember that on Saturday, that was the Sabbath for people. And so after Jesus had died, after his body was taken down from the cross and he was put into the tomb, everybody went home. There wasn't a funeral celebration. There wasn't, a watch party at the tomb. Everybody went home. No one was expecting him to be resurrected. As far as they were concerned, everything they had hoped for had died with Jesus. And for us, it's important that we not laugh at them or ridicule them or make fun of them, because we are 2,000 plus years after the resurrection. We don't have to wait for it. It already has happened, and it happens for us every day. But for them, that death was quite real. And they had, even though Jesus had told them over and over, yeah, all this is going to happen, and I will rise again on the third day. They had no way of knowing that that was going to be true. Even though they trusted him, even though he was the center of their universe, they really had no way to know that that was going to be true. And so when they watched him die, as far as they were concerned, that was it. And so on Saturday, all they could do was go home and grieve and celebrate the Sabbath. That's what they were left with on that first Saturday. And so, yeah, spending time in prayer, that's right on. Yeah. Any thoughts or comments on that? That's all I have planned for today. Again, folks at home, if you want a copy of the handout, just send me an email and I'll get it to you. I've got it electronically, so yeah. Thank you for being here this morning. Blessings on your Sunday. I will see you in worship in 18 minutes.